Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello, and welcome to an hour of mind power. This is Donna Sebo. And our guest today, Nora Gedgraves, we've not been able to reach her at this moment. Her line is busy, so as soon as we are able to do that, she'll be on the air with us. We'll be talking about primal body, primal mind. But in the interim, I thought I would chat with you about how what we think and what we do does make a difference. And all of us can have an impact on life in such a very, very special way. And so many times we're not aware of how, as individuals, our impact is so significant. And I was reviewing some material this morning, and there was a woman whose grandmother had influenced her very strongly. And she didn't have a whole bunch of interaction with her grandmother. But one of the things her grandmother always encouraged her to do was to ask questions. And I was going through this material, and this woman today is an author. In fact, she's probably going to be a guest on my show. But I was intrigued with the fact that regardless of how people in the family made fun of grandma, and they'd say, oh, she doesn't know this, she doesn't know that, she doesn't know the other, her grandmother's essence as a person really impressed this lady. And she said, one of the things my grandmother constantly would enforce in conversations, she'd make a statement about something, and then she would ask for me to give a response. Well, I was little, and what did I know? But she said I would interact with Grandma, and she would ask me questions and say, have you thought about this, or have you thought about that? So she said, here I was, again, not interacting with my grandmother very often, but it was often enough where that seed of ask questions, don't be afraid to go against what somebody else may think you should do. Just be sure you ask questions. Get your information. As I was reading more of the material, Grandma had come from the Ukraine in Russia, and she had lived through a number of very, very difficult periods. And one of the things she tried to impart into her granddaughter is that just because someone puts the term expert next to their name does not mean that they're an expert. What they may claim in the way of knowledge may not necessarily be compatible with what the experience is in real life. And her grandmother taught her in a very subtle way that intellectual perception many times has to be questioned because actual real-life experience brings up something else. And as I was reading that and I was thinking about it, her grandmother will never be written up in a major newspaper or any place else, but the impact that it had on this writer was incredible because as she matured, she developed that habit, and she found that it was a very good habit to question. Many times when she asked questions, she might not know the right question to ask, but she said, if you don't ask, you just don't find out. Taking it another step further, there was a professor at MIT who years ago, and I don't have the exact year on this, at MIT, he was teaching engineering. And he found that his students were just memorizing things. They were just quoting things out of a book. Now, this man was experienced in practical education of application, as well as very well learned on so many academic levels. And he knew from practical experience that many things that might be stated in a textbook is not necessarily going to apply in real life. So he invented a contest. And what he did, the students were all excited about participating in this contest that he started. And what they did, they gathered together, and he handed First, he made rules. Let me back up a minute. First, he made the rules. One, they had to have partners because this was something where they had to learn how to work together as a team. So I don't remember how many people would be in a team. It could be anywhere from 2 to 4, let's say. So you had the team. Then what he did, he gave each one of them a box of junk, screws, wires. I mean, you'd look at it and you'd go, you have got to be kidding. And then he gave them an assignment to build something. He said, one, you're going to learn how to work with other people in doing this exercise and being involved in this contest. And two, you're going to have to think outside of the box because you're using things that just aren't, quote unquote, logical, yet you can put this all together. You can come up with things. And three, you're going to learn that a lot of the applications in textbooks don't necessarily apply to real life. So what he did was put this out to them as a challenge. Well, their inventiveness was just incredible. And as he said, they learned a lot of the applications that they had been studying didn't necessarily fit the form of what they were designing or deal with the variables that they encountered with their designs, their innovative thoughts. There were winners of these contests, but the truth is that none of the students were losers because he was teaching them lessons in application, teaching them to ask what. How can we? If so, what can we do? And they had to work with what they had in front of them. This is a contest that goes on today, and of course it's become extremely sophisticated. But these students in today's world build all kinds of robots and different applications that are phenomenal. And they're breaking ground in a way and manner that is absolutely awesome. So many times life presents us with situations and or conditions that cause us to be able to step outside of our box and maybe even stepping outside of the box of what other people have established as being an absolute. Creative inventiveness is something that comes about because we're curious. Or maybe it's necessary that we look at different options, and it really is amazing what we can do. Someone sent me an email today where bumper cars, every once in a while you'll find a place that still has them. They used to be really, really popular at carnivals and things like this, and they do exactly what their name says. They bump into each other, and it's a lot of fun. Well, somebody got the marvelous idea of making these into actual vehicles that you can drive, and they are legal. And I thought, here is an innovative way of taking something that maybe would have been thrown away, instead historically preserved and functional at the same time. Now, I know that may sound like a silly example, but so many times the Western world has been described as a throwaway society. I am so fascinated with how people can take what maybe somebody else would throw away. The adage you've heard, what's one person's junk is another person's gold. It really is true. So as we're going through life and as we are looking at all kinds of challenges that we might be facing, the key is we work with where we are, you take the moment, you take the day, you do the best you possibly can with it, but at the same time, keep in the front of your mind, where else can I go? What else can I do? What other resolution do I have to this? How do I make this work so that I'm going to be able to take this challenge and make it into something that's going to work for me, not against me? It's a provocative thought, and it's something that I think we need to be reminded of. Now, again, my guest today that we were supposed to have, Nora Gadgoudis, her line is busy. We have not been able to get through to her. Her book, Primal Body, Primal Mind, is what we are going to be discussing. And as soon as we're able to reach her, then we will be sure to bring her on the air. But in the interim, I'm going to be opening up the phone lines. The telephone number, if you would like to call in and chat with me, is 888-627-6008. 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. And I do want to say, all I, if you're a first-time listener, all I want you to do is give me your first name or your initial. I love to know where you're calling in from. And then just let me share with you what I perceive about you as an individual. Donna Sebo here, 888-627-6008. Again, as soon as we hear from our guest, we will be bringing her on the air. Strange things happen in life. Do you believe in ghosts? Do you believe that someone can pass over and perhaps come back for a visit? Well, let me share a story with you about a miller. This is in the 20th century, 1906. It was during the spring. And his name was J.C. Playfair. He lived in Lamhurst, England. And he had a stable. And he'd go there regularly, you know, daily, sometimes a couple of times a day, to check on his horses. Well, this one day, he goes out to his stable, and all of his horses were turned around in their stalls. Instead of facing head in, it was the rear end that was facing in. That wasn't the way it was supposed to be. Now, one of these horses was missing. And he checked all the places where he felt a horse would go. He couldn't figure out, and he started looking in unexpected places where, for whatever reasons, he couldn't imagine the horse would go there. Well, do you know that next to the stable, he had a very tiny hay room. The doorway was just barely large enough for a man to go through. Well, he happened to look in there, and there was his missing horse. Now, to get the horse out of this hay room, they had to knock down one of the walls to get the animal out. Explanation? He had none. Somehow or another, the animal ended up in this small hay room, gaining entrance there by means he's never been able to explain. Also, at that same time, spring of the year, 1906, there was a German physician. He also was a theosophist. His name was Franz Hartmann. And he said something very unique happened to his brother-in-law, who happened to be a count and was a captain in the Bavarian cavalry. One of the horses that belonged to the captain became very, very sick. The groom talked to the captain because he said every morning the horse was totally covered with sweat and its mane and tail was braided. Well, the count decided he was going to do an investigation. He didn't know who was causing the mischief and the stress to the horse that was actually making it sick. So this is what happened. At 2 a.m, the horse began to just tremble really intensely. The count was awakened, and what he saw, he couldn't believe. He watched the tail and the mane being plaited into intricate braids. The horse was just absolutely traumatized by this, and it was totally covered in foam, in sweat, because it didn't know. Or if it did know, it couldn't express what this energy was. Now, there's another story to go along with this. In 1918, we all know about the great magician Harry Houdini. Well, in that year, he decided he was going to make an elephant vanish. Magicians always have to come up with bigger and bigger tricks. Well, Jenny, the pachyderm, the elephant, was bowing to the audience, and while she was doing that, Houdini's assistants set up an 8-foot square cabinet with solid sides and tops. It had hinged doors at the back and curtains at the front. And the cabinet was set up 2 feet above the ground, and it was precluding the use of a trap door. Now, Houdini had Jenny go into the cabinet, Curtains were closed. Houdini fired a pistol, the curtains opened, and the elephant was gone. You know what? Houdini said this, even the elephant doesn't know how it's done. Well, I think we've got our guest. Hello, welcome. I believe it is Nora.
Yes, it is, Donna. Hello.
Hello, I'm so glad we were able to get you.
Yes, we apparently got our lines a little bit crossed, but looks like it all worked out. So,
well, I am so glad. For those of you listening, I've been telling you we were going to be getting Nora, and her book is called Primal Body, Primal Mind. Now, what this is relating to is dealing with wellness on a level that is going to enable you not to enjoy just good health, but also know that you're going to have, because of that good health, a longer and a much more productive life. Now, Nora, you are a certified nutritional therapist. You're also involved in neurofeedback.
That's correct.
And you are a member of the Nutritional Therapy Association, the National Association of Nutritional Professionals, the Nutrition and Metabolism Society, and the Weston A. Price Foundation. And you're a Northwesterner. You live in Oregon.
That's right. Yep,
well,
you got it all right.
Absolutely. Well, with all of the associations and organizations that you belong to, I'm even amazed you were able to get a book done. Because
you also have a private practice.
Yeah.
Tell me about it. If I would have known, starting out with all of that, what it was going to take, everything that was going to go into doing it, I'm not sure I would have done it. Although I'm glad that I did it, but it has been an unbelievable amount of work.
Oh, I mean, this book is just incredibly filled with all kinds of fascinating information. Now, Brent Pottinger brought
up. Brought
up a comment in the foreword of your book about a one-size-fits-all is a size that fits no one. We have had so many years, in fact, even today, you can go into any bookstore, go anywhere, and you'll have at least 10,000 different diets that are supposed to make your life absolutely perfectly wonderful, and you'll be slim, trim, without an ounce of fat anywhere, even on your eyeballs, and this is supposed to work, and it doesn't.
Right.
Why?
Well, it does for some people, and it does for enough that these books, a certain number of books, are able to sell. But what I think gets left out is the complexity of the human makeup and the complexity of the interrelationships between all of our different systems. And so it's one of the things that I bring to light in my book is that complexity. I don't. There's sort of an old saying that if all you have is a hammer, everything looks like a nail, and so it's all one thing. It's, you know, it's all just about low carb, or it's all just about this particular food additive, or it's all just about this particular supplement that everybody's deficient in, or, you know, on and on and on. I think it's human nature to try to distill things down to the simplest element. Unfortunately, real life isn't necessarily black and white. Real life is oftentimes shades of gray, and I like to think outside of that black and white box.
I agree, and I've been saying for a number of years one of the biggest breakthroughs for the human being with technology is going to be assessing what is right for an individual's metabolic patternings, and it could be assessed from a drop of blood, something like this, but it is going to be available to us because, my goodness, one person could eat buckets of sugar and it wouldn't bother them at all. Somebody else ends up with serious health problems.
Well,
so different.
Yeah, but I think that the person that eats buckets of sugar and thinks it's not doing anything at all is going to arrive at a place where they realize that they actually have been doing a tremendous amount of damage. I think when we're younger, we have more compensatory things in place that lead us to think that maybe we're not experiencing some of the things that we might be. And as we get older, some of this stuff starts to break down. Sooner or later, you will pay a price for that sugar. And for some people, it's more immediate, and for some people, it's down the pike. But there's nobody that gets by without paying a price with a consumption of sugar.
Nutrition is very, very important, and you use a term, biochemical individuality.
Mm-hmm.
And you used a quote, all of the structure and functions of the human body are built from and run on nutrients.
Yes, that quote actually came from one of my mentors, Dr. Janet Lang.
Yes.
He's also a dear friend, yes.
And it is amazing to me that it has taken so long for us to evolve to this, because we know how important, you know, vitamin C was to prevent scurvy. There are so many different things we can point to in different cultural environments that people have been aware of, that they paid attention to. And yet now we get bombarded with so much stuff. I had someone just the other day I was talking with that said that one of the things that distressed them, they were a pharmacist. They worked in a pharmaceutical environment. They said people would come in and all of a sudden they heard something on a program about, oh, you need to take this much of vitamin D, and they'd come in and they were taking not just vitamin D, but vitamin E, some other vitamins, and they didn't have a clue as to what was really going to work best for them. And this is a person
right.
that has a background in chemistry. And it was very difficult for her to try to convey what she knew at the time to these people that were coming in. They said, oh, no, we heard this on the radio, or we saw this on television, or we've
right.
got this ad. And it just, she said, it just absolutely made her so sad, because they didn't understand that maybe this would be toxic if they were taking medications or something like this. So to get this book together, what prompted you to do it? I know you said if you had known what it was going to entail, you would have thought twice.
Well,
but
it was actually a
why
work
did you
in,
do it?
It was actually a work in progress over about a 10-year time period. But what initially prompted me to do it was I was actually working at a neurofeedback clinic. I was operating as sort of a supervisor there. And there was a young boy that I was working with that when I had arrived at the clinic, they had already been working with him for a while doing neurofeedback. And he had a diagnosis of ADHD and Tourette's, and so, you know, he had ticking problems and he couldn't focus and he was hyperactive and all the stuff that goes along with all that. And honestly, they hadn't gotten that far. They hadn't gotten anywhere near as far with him as they would have expected to, and as we normally see. And it was frustrating for everyone involved. And one day the kid came in and his head was hanging down and he looked really depressed. And I cared about this kid a lot, and I actually found him very thoughtful and sensitive. And so I just, you know, put my hand on his shoulder and said, hey, talk to me. What's going on? You know, you look really down. He said, oh, he said, I was ticking again. And then, you know, it was driving my mom crazy, and she blew up at me, and now she feels bad, and I feel bad. And I said, well, wait a sec. Talk to me. You're feeling bad. He's an 11-year-old boy.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thinking, why, you know, why do you feel, you feeling bad because you're frustrated, you're angry, or you feel guilty? He said, I feel guilty, and I will never forget this as long as I live. He said, I can't possibly know what it's like for her to have a son like me, and she can't know what it's like for me either. And he sat down in the chair, and he kind of kicked the table, and he said, I hate this ADD. I just hate it, and I just wish it would go away. And I'm thinking, okay, something's wrong with this picture. You sit tight, kid. I'm going to go talk to your mom. I go sit down and talk to mom. She's in tears. She's like, I don't know what we're, you know, what we're getting. I feel like we're back at square one. So I just said, talk to me about what he eats. And the kid was what I call a carbivore. He ate cereals, he ate chips, he ate, you know, tater tots, he ate,
mm-hmm.
you know, lots of processed snack foods. He ate very little protein, he ate very little quality fat. And I thought, well, you know, it seems to me that there's something worthy of exploration here. So I gave her, in a nutshell, my little homily about, you know, what I thought that they ought to try as a diet with this kid. I said, just for 2 weeks and see what we get. I said, you can do anything for 2 weeks. So she said, okay, the whole family will do it. Well, after 1 week, we had a normal kid.
Amazing.
And what happened with my boss at the time, he came to me and he said, I want you doing this with every client that comes in here. And I started talking to people that came in, and their eyes were glazing over because, you know, you've seen the book. It's 400 pages long. And
right.
I had a lot to say. And it was not sinking in very well. And it was frustrating for everybody. They were interested, but they couldn't take it in. So I went home one weekend in a peak of frustration, and I sat down in front of my computer, and I furiously typed up about a 10-page article to hand out to parents and to clients who were doing neurofeedback at the time. And that was the beginning of the book. And then as time went on, I realized, you know, I really should have mentioned something about this, and, oh, I should have said something about that, and, oh, I guess I really need to provide a bibliography. And it just started growing from there. And eventually there was a 100-some-odd page manuscript that floated around for a while. And then eventually I came into some real revelations, I guess, in my thinking that were very energizing for me. And I thought, now I have to sit down and really put this into a format that I can get published so that it's all in one place and I can just hand it out and, you know, and I'll just have it. And I had no idea at the time what was going to happen when I did that, or the amount of interest that it was going to generate, or how far around the world the message was going to reach, and how fast. Mm-hmm. I just wasn't prepared for what has happened. My book has already spent time at number one on Amazon in all diet and health-related categories. It was at one point number eight on all of books on Amazon. And mm-hmm. And it's just, I'm doing a tour of Australia in exactly a month from now, speaking tour of Australia, and I've been speaking at UCLA, and there's just all kinds of stuff happening, so who knew?
That's true. Let's bring up a couple of points that you have in the book. One, fat is the prime commodity for a concentrated nutrient and energy value, and that, contrary to some thinking, some foods should be cooked because there is a toxicity, especially with plants, if you don't cook them. Certain plants, I remember a physician saying once that carrots are good when they're cooked because it releases certain components.
Well, I actually prefer carrots raw. When they're cooked, they become starchier, and they actually become much more glycemic. They're more likely to spike your blood sugar. If you're eating them raw, there's enough of it bound up in the cellulose in the carrot that you're not going to impact your blood sugar quite as much. So you can usually get away with more. But because we don't have four stomachs, for starters, at least most of us don't, the way an herbivore would, an animal, in other words, that is designed to extract all of the nutrient density of plant foods. Cooking is our way of mimicking what happens in a four-stomached animal to some degree, although it doesn't necessarily ferment the foods in the way that it does in the rumen of a cow or a sheep or goat. But it does help to break down the cellulose, which is where a lot of things get bound up. Now, there are things in certain types of plant foods called phytates that will bind with certain minerals and make them unavailable to you. Oxalic acid, which is commonly found in things like spinach, for instance, is a really rich source of oxalic acid. The oxalic acid can give some people kidney stones. It also binds the minerals, and a lot of people think of spinach as a great source of iron, but the oxalic acid actually binds the iron and makes it unavailable to you. So when you cook the spinach, you actually break down the oxalic acid so that now that is less likely to cause you problems, and you're better able to absorb some of the nutrients in that spinach. I think that a combination of raw and cooked is mm-hmm. good, and that includes also animal foods.
So I think that's very true.
Yeah.
Now, you bring up a point about cholesterol. And
yes.
I've had a number of guests on my show talking about the cholesterol myth.
Yes.
I remember reading research about women in France who were elderly, whose health was outstanding, and they all found that they had higher cholesterol levels than the established norm. And what's scary to me is that the numbers keep getting lower and lower and lower. And
I think it's catastrophic is what it is. Yeah.
It is. It's just catastrophic. So tell us your viewpoint on this and why.
Okay, well, cholesterol is something that we have consumed in our foods as a species for at least 2.5 million years. And, we have mechanisms in our body that regulate the production and regulate the levels of cholesterol in our body. Cholesterol is basically, it is an essential building block of all of our steroidal hormones. It also is a really very important component of our cell membranes. It functions like an antioxidant, by the way, in our bodies. It is found in our nerve sheaths and the white matter of our brain and in our adrenal glands. We absolutely have to have it for brain function and development. As a matter of fact, the richest repository of cholesterol in the human body is in the brain. About 25% mm-hmm. of all the cholesterol in your body actually exists in your brain and is essential for your brain function. You start lowering cholesterol, I promise you, you're going to start noticing an impairment in your cognitive functioning. Part of your, you know, it helps to maintain your cellular integrity and helps to regulate also the cellular permeability so nutrients can get in and out of your cells in a healthy way. It can help stabilize your moods by helping to stabilize neurotransmitters, so it has roles to play with respect to mood. And it's very, very important for a healthy functioning immune system. We actually manufacture at least a couple thousand milligrams of cholesterol every single day. And every cell in your body has a means of manufacturing its own supply. It's not a most efficient process in the world. It's much better to get it from food, but we can do it. And if you're not eating cholesterol, because it's so important for every aspect of your body and your brain and your nervous system, if you're not consuming it, then your body's going to get really good at manufacturing it from other things in your diet, like carbohydrates in particular. And there are enzymes in the liver that will start converting carbohydrates in your diet into cholesterol at an accelerated pace to try to make up for what you're not getting in your diet if you're trying to eat a low cholesterol diet. But we all need cholesterol, and if you eat enough, it will help cool down the overproduction of cholesterol. Now, if a person has really high levels of cholesterol, and what's high is a relative term. This 200 milligrams per deciliter marker that says, okay, anything over that is a disease or something, that's ridiculous. There's no scientific, nothing scientific to support that in any meaningful way. That was an arbitrary number selected. But let's just say you have cholesterol of 250 or something like that, which might be more than what a person might consider to be normal or average. What that tells me is that there is something going on in your body for which cholesterol is needed for whatever reason. In and of itself, it's no more a problem, no more points to being the cause of your disease than, say, gray hair would be the cause of old age, for instance. It's an indicator. It's mm-hmm. like you see the gray hair and you know a person's getting older, but the gray hair isn't causing it, it just happens to be associated with it. Same thing with the cholesterol. So when I see elevated cholesterol, I'm immediately looking at what else is going on with that person. If a person has depressed thyroid function, you're going to have elevated cholesterol. It's just going to go with that territory. If you have chronic inflammation, you're going to have elevated cholesterol. If you have a chronic infection of some kind, say a bacterial infection or a viral infection or a parasitic infection, you will have elevated cholesterol. So there are many things that can elevate cholesterol, and it's important to figure out what's going on. Autoimmune diseases very often have elevated cholesterol or extremely depressed cholesterol. You have extremes of either too high or too low sometimes in autoimmune diseases. But regardless, it's not trying to hurt you. Your body isn't out to get you. You know, your body is trying to do the best that it can with what it has going on. And if it's producing cholesterol, it's trying to help you deal with whatever the infection happens to be. It's like, and it's our body's version of duct tape. Cholesterol goes to wherever it's needed in our bodies to patch up arterial damage or to maintain some kind of cellular integrity. And blaming cholesterol and trying to stamp it out with statin drugs is the equivalent of a fireman coming to put out the fire, and you're blaming the fireman for the fire. It's like sending away the firemen that come to put out the fire and blaming them for it. Mm-hmm. It's the same mentality.
You have a very good section on your book on grains and gluten.
Oh, boy.
We have so many people that have developed celiac.
Yes.
There are so many different intestinal gastric situations that have just compounded in the last 20 or 30 years. And in the dietary recommendations that have been given by the government, et cetera, there has been a heavy focus on grains. You've done extensive research on this. What are the pluses, what are the minuses, and why?
When it comes to grains, I honestly do not know of any pluses, to be perfectly honest. There is no such thing as a grain deficiency in anyone's diet. Grains really can only complicate health. I don't see grains as actually supporting health particularly in any way, other than maybe providing calories in, something better than nothing in terms of calories. But grains are a source of, they're mainly a starch-based food, with just a smattering of protein content. And unfortunately, part of the protein content of grains includes something called gluten. Now, gluten isn't just one thing. It's many things. There are hundreds of different peptides of gluten. But there are some that are particularly known to cause a lot of problems. I see gluten as not a food substance, but rather what amounts to a contaminant now in our food supply. And the incidence of gluten sensitivity and celiac disease now have risen literally 400% in the last 50 years. And it's not that they're just being diagnosed more. In fact, it's being very poorly diagnosed, honestly. But it is just simply that much more prevalent, in part because we are more vulnerable. I think our genome is deteriorating in the face of multiple generations of exposure to processed foods and to an inferior food supply, but also because they are now selecting for more gluten in the grains that they're growing, because gluten is, they consider it to be a useful substance when you're baking things. It makes things fluffy and all that kind of stuff. But the consequences are potentially lethal. Right now, the number three cause of death in the industrialized world is autoimmune disease, collectively. The number one autoimmune disease of all of them, and by the way, gluten has been associated to some degree or another, either as a causative factor or as a complicating factor in essentially all of them. But the number one autoimmune disease, the most prevalent and also the least diagnosed, is celiac disease. Roughly 1% of everybody with celiac disease has ever been diagnosed. And celiac, of course, is totally associated with gluten in grains. The number two is autoimmune thyroid, also known as Hashimoto's. But there are many, many autoimmune diseases, and some of which many people don't even recognize as autoimmune, like things like asthma or psoriasis, scleroderma, or autism is an autoimmune brain disease. There are many, many different forms of autoimmune, but it's basically a state in which your body is attacking itself. Now, autoimmune diseases have also been they're highly inflammatory, and as such, they're highly correlated also with other diseases like heart disease and cancer, which are the number one and two killer. So, There is a tremendous problem associated with gluten sensitivity that is largely unrecognized in our culture. And most people think of it as something that just causes digestive upset. Well, 7 or 8 out of 10 celiac patients don't have any gastrointestinal symptoms whatsoever. As a matter of fact, in an article in the journal Neurology, which was published back in 2005, it stated that, and here's a quote, "Gluten sensitivity can be primarily and at times exclusively a neurological disease, affecting not only the brain and nervous system directly, but also cognitive and psychiatric illness." So if you have symptoms of any kind, that is one avenue to look at. Unfortunately, most of the testing for it is very, very poor, and the blood tests are only about 30% accurate, and salivary tests aren't much better than that, and their false negatives are more of the rule than the exception. There is only one laboratory right now that is offering accurate testing. They're a recently opened lab. They're called Cyrix Labs. I don't, by the way, have financial ties with them at all. But I'm just very excited with the work they're doing. And it's CYREXLABS.com. You have to go to a licensed healthcare provider who has an account with Cyrix Labs in order to get their testing. But it is well worth going through the trouble to find a provider that offers that.
Nora, will you stay with me for a few more minutes? We're going
to
take a break.
I would be happy to.
Thank you. We'll be coming back with Nora. Primal Body, Primal Mind is the name of her book. We're going to come back in just a moment. Don't go away, because we're going to be talking about soy products when we come back. So don't go away.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature, however, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Sebo to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Hi, this is Donna, and we're back with Nora Gagaudis, Primal Body, Primal Mind. Her book has so much good information in it, and I really feel it is so important for us, Nora, to talk about soy.
Yes.
I am so aware of the negative effect, and it saddens me to find that women think that giving soy milk to their babies is good. I look at this, and I've talked with people. I said, are you aware of the Asian culture? Yes, soy is used, but very discriminatingly. They are just, it's not a mainstay of their diet. It never has been. Centuries ago, they learned it was bad stuff.
Right.
So let's talk about this, because we have a market with soy that is just unbelievable, and it's hard to get through to people.
You know, like 20 or 30 years ago, almost nobody ate soy. I mean, hardly anybody thought about eating it. Tofu was out there, but it was considered a really fringe food, you know, that was sort of eaten by hippies, and it, you know, let's face it, it tastes like, you know, I won't say the word, but, you know, we know it doesn't taste great. And the people that were in the soy industry, they'd already, of course, taken over this the oil industry with soybean oil, and you know, and were replacing all the old traditional fats with soybean hydrogenated soybean oil, which is now the number one source of fat calories in this country, which is a catastrophic statistic. But they thought, okay, so how do we make more money at this? Because we're feeding it to cattle now, and you know, we've got the vegetable oil industry in the palm of our hand. So, you know, but how do we get people to eat this stuff? Well, you know, it was a brilliant marketing campaign. Let's put together a few carefully designed studies, you know, that we pay for, and that help paint the picture that this is somehow a health food, and we'll market it to yuppies. And that's exactly what they did. And now it's this mainstream thing. Oh, it's wonderful for women because it contains estrogen. Well, if you know, being exposed to estrogens is great for women when women are prone to estrogen-related, you know, disease processes like cancer. And it's also, you know, being turned into, as you mentioned, soy milk and fed to babies, which again is a potentially catastrophic thing. It's like the equivalent, because of all of the estrogenic compounds in it, it's like the equivalent of giving your baby several birth control pills a day. And you can imagine what this does to a developing little endocrine system. It's a mess. It's very hard on the pancreas because there are trypsin inhibitors in soy that can block your ability to digest and absorb protein over time, can cause pancreatic enlargement and pancreatic diseases. Soy also contains the highest level of phytic acid of any other grain or legume, and phytic acid, of course, is the stuff that binds with minerals and causes your body not only not to absorb them, but actually extracts minerals out of your body. You can give people serious zinc deficiencies by eating a lot of soy, which can affect cognitive functioning and the ability to focus on things and mood and your immune system and many other things that zinc is used for. You can develop anemia. You can develop other deficiencies in other important minerals. I go on for pages and pages and pages in my book, actually, as to all of the things that have been identified as problematic with soy. And soy products very commonly contain a lot of aluminum, of course, which has been associated with things like Alzheimer's disease and other neurological problems. It actually increases our body's requirement for vitamin D. The soy also contains something called goitrogens, really high amounts of goitrogens, actually, that can suppress your thyroid function, make your thyroid not work properly. And there's a lot of naturally occurring MSG in soy products, which, of course, is a neurotoxin. And there are some studies suggesting a link between soy consumption and kidney stones. Increase your requirement for B12, and so soy has a lot of problems associated with it, but it's also, among other things, the single most genetically modified crop out of all of them. It's very, very hard to find a non-genetically modified soybean, and GMOs, a lot of people have heard of GMOs, are one of the most potentially cataclysmic inclusions to not just the diet of every human on Earth, but to life on Earth. It threatens, the GMOs really literally threaten everything because they're getting out into the natural environment now and cross-pollinating with other things, and it's literally, these are frankenfoods. These are foods that are unnaturally spliced together. They will splice animal and plant genes together and create something that they think has positive characteristics of both. But there's no way of predicting ultimately what these things will do inside a human body. And some of the studies are actually extremely frightening to see what happens with the reproductive health of the animals that they test these foods on, and not just that, but what kinds of manifestations and birth defects are actually showing up now in the offspring of animals fed genetically modified foods. Everybody should be avoiding genetically modified foods, and soy is the number one most genetically modified food.
Nora, we probably could talk for hours and for days about
the subject
matter. Your book, Primal Body, Primal Mind, is really quite informative. You have all kinds of references to back up what you have brought out in the way of information. And there's good information in here. And for so many people, it can be very difficult to change your mindset to be open and receptive, because we all have been indoctrinated with certain modalities of thought, thinking it was an absolute. and all of us are victim to it. So it's something to be able to examine, to look at, to question, to say, could this really make a difference with me? And you also have some dietary recommendations in there, which basically is common sense as far as I'm concerned. But your book, Primal Body, Primal Mind, is very well done. Nora, how do we get to your website? Where do people go? I know this book is on Amazon.com. Where do they go to find more about you?
Well, and you can also get the book if you go to www.primalbody-primalmind.com. There's a tremendous amount of free information there, and there are videos and podcasts and all kinds of things that people can access free of charge. And you can also access my book through that same thing. And stay tuned. And please sign up for my newsletter when you go. There are some very exciting things that are going to be coming down the pike in pretty short order here, and you don't want to miss that. But yes, the book isn't written to freak people out. I mean, there's a lot of information that's going to surprise people and maybe even disturb them about what they've been told about what actually constitutes a healthy diet and what doesn't. But this book is really ultimately about self-empowerment. I want to see people understanding how their body and mind work so that they can take charge of their own health and not have to rely on the media or maybe interests that may be more interested in their bottom line than with, how well you are. And so, anyway, that's what I wanted to say about that.
Well, we are out of time, Nora. Thank you so much for being with me. This is Donna Sebo. We are out of time, but I want you to check out Nora Gedgaudas' book, Primal Body, Primal Mind. Her last name is spelled G-E-D-G-A-U-D-A-S. She is here in the Pacific Northwest out of Oregon. Go to her website, primalbody-primalmind.com. She has a free newsletter. I really think that you will be interested, and we all have to take things in our own way and in our own time, but I think being educated really does make a difference, and reading is part of that educational process. So check out our website, and again, Nora, thank you for being my guest today. This is Donna Sebo. Remember, always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. We'll be back with you same time, same place next week. Talk to you then. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.